Hi guys, just a reminder that this podcast, as well as many of my online resources, is delivered freely. If you would like to help me get this message of healing out to millions of people around the world, please consider clicking on the donate button on my website, thecureforchronicpain.com. Thank you. Hello, my friends. Happy podcast day. This is Nicole, and welcome to my podcast, The Cure for Chronic Pain, with me, Nicole Sachs. Welcome, welcome. So happy to have you here. I just took off my headphones. My God, those things, they're clamping my head. All right, here we are. Here we are, the day after Thanksgiving, hoping that this podcast is not coming too little too late after last night, because of course it's called Family Conflict, Anxiety, and Emotional Repression. But you know what? The holidays are long. I have some friends that call the holiday season hurricane season. It starts the day before Thanksgiving and it ends on January 2nd. I kind of think that's funny. Plenty of opportunity to interact with family. Now, I know that we are in the holiday season of coronavirus 2020. And so perhaps there will be less interaction with family. But, you know, you really never know how family interaction is going to manifest. Sometimes it could be over Zoom. Sometimes it could be over phone calls. And sometimes it could just be annoying conflict that you don't feel like you can express to people that mean a lot to you. So it's still really, really important for us to discuss the anxiety and the strife that family conflict within yourself and also personally within your family can cause, and the amount of emotional repression that can happen if we're not awake and aware of what's going on. So here we are together. We're going to talk about all of that today. Before we do, I have tons of stuff I need to talk about at the front end, so I'm just trying to like center myself and say it all. First thing I want to say is today, if you are listening to this podcast on time when it drops, it is Black Friday, which is November 27th, 2020, and my anxiety course, something I've worked on for months and months, I'm super proud of, it launched at midnight today. And so for the next 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, until midnight on the 29th, which I guess is legitimately midnight on the first, no, it's the 29th, sorry, I'm really bad with dates and math and many things that seem very simple. For the next 3 days, how about let's just go with that? It is deeply discounted. So the course will retail at $295, but for the next 3 days with the discount code Black Friday, it will be $195. Now, many of you guys have signed up for the waitlist, and if you did, you will be notified or have been notified by about this via email. But if you're listening to the podcast and you're looking to get some help with your anxiety and you want freedom from an anxious life, please go over to my website, thecureforchronicpain.com. The link will be available on the homepage as well as the course tab. And the course tab also has a full description of the anxiety course. So it's live. It's finally here. Take advantage of that offer. The offer will expire on midnight of the 29th. And so please know that at that point, it will go up to the regular retail price of $295. Okay, so there's that. The other thing is I want to talk to you guys about the Curable app because they're also having a Black Friday deal that is really, really awesome. So some people who have been following my work know about Curable. So essentially what I do is I am a practitioner of mind-body medicine. I began as a patient of mind-body medicine when I was very young, and I've been doing this work for 25 years in my own body and with thousands and thousands of people around the world. And in a lot of ways over the years, I've been a one-woman show, you know, not because I choose to isolate myself, because when you're in private practice, I wrote a book, you know, it's just kind of left foot, right foot, breathe, getting through, bringing this message. And in the last couple of years, I've really hit the gas and gone with the podcast and the YouTube channel and the website and my Instagram, and all information is there at thecureforchronicpain.com if you're new to the work. But Curable is an app. And, you know, making an app is not easy. It's a really complicated process, especially if you want to do it well. And Curable really does it well. So for those of you who don't know about Curable, it is used by people all over the world. By right now, I mean, I think the stats are probably higher, but more than 100,000 people with chronic pain, because it's the first app to deliver evidence-based methods for chronic pain self-care. They talk tons about the brain science. So if you're a scientifically minded person, more left brainy, you want to know all about the science behind it. Curable does a fantastic job with that. They offer an online community just like I do. So it's another opportunity to join a private online community to discuss this stuff. They help you take my work, take the things you're learning about mind-body medicine. Perhaps you've read Dr. Sarno's books, and take it and make it practical and usable for your everyday life. They also offer something, not all the time, but it's a sign-up thing where they do something called Curable Groups. It's a 12-week boot camp that you can get involved. You can hear from TMS professionals. You can form a community. I know many people in these groups stay connected. In fact, before COVID swooped in and canceled my in-person retreats that were supposed to happen over the summer, I think there was a whole Curable group coming to my retreat in California. So hopefully we will all be able to reconvene once the world feels a bit safer. But right now, just know that Curable brings people together. It's really a great app. Nearly 70% of Curable users experience physical pain relief after only 30 days of use, and 80% report a higher quality of life. So it's just, I believe in it. I have been to their offices. In fact, right before COVID, I was interviewed on their podcast, and it was an incredible experience. Like Mind, Like Body is the name of their podcast, and I just freaking love that interview. In fact, if you haven't, go over to the Like Mind, Like Body podcast and listen to me interviewed there, because it's, you know how sometimes you're just on your game, you know, your best information comes flying out of you. That's how that day felt like to me. And I love talking to Laura from Curable. So any case, Curable is also offering a Black Friday deal, 60% off a year-long membership. And also when throughout the year, to my members of my community, they offer a 50% discount. But if you're going to get an extra 10% off by acting between now and Monday, November 30th, so you just go to getcurable.com/Nicole. That's getcurable.com/NICOLE, and you will get 60% off the year-long membership if you act now for the Black Friday weekend, and 50% off the rest of the year with my code. So totally, totally worth your while. Okay, what else do I need to tell you? A quick Blue Dog update for my lovely community that has been pouring love all over us, and I appreciate it so much. Today marks, when this podcast drops, it will be 2 weeks and 2 days after his surgery. And as of the moment I'm recording this, which is only a few days prior, he is doing amazingly well. He's starting to put weight on the leg. He still is not allowed to take long walks or anything like that, but he's putting weight on the leg. He's a happy guy. You know, dogs are so amazing. The way they tolerate things, the way they tolerate, I don't know, discomfort or like bullshit. They just tolerate bullshit in a way that people don't. He has worn that godforsaken, uncomfortable cone. And we tried to go with the gentler cone version with it looked like an inflatable raft around his neck. It did not keep him from licking the area, so we had to return it. But he's in this just awful cone day in and day out. He can't lick his body, which makes him happy to lick his body. He can't lick his body anywhere, you know, places where dogs like to lick their body. And he is just a trooper, a champ. An example of positive energy, an example of the kind of tolerance that maybe we would all do well with, just accepting our life for what it is at the moment. It's so cute. But anyway, he's doing great. So thank you for all your well wishes. And hopefully right around when this podcast airs, he'll be able to start taking 15-minute walks and start rehabbing the leg. And so that's happening. So yay, Blue Dog. What else? Is there anything else I want to tell you? I really do these podcasts on the fly, like completely, because I'm not a person that does well with planning. I think it's because all of the things I know come so deeply from my heart and my energy, and also my very, very well-studied and deep knowledge of this stuff, that I don't like to plan, because then it doesn't even come out authentic. So Sorry that you have to sit and listen to me say, I don't know if I have something else to say. Okay. We're going to just assume that everything that I am going to bring forward is ready to come. So let's talk about family conflict, the anxiety it causes, and the emotional repression that it can necessitate. Okay. First of all, thank you also. Somebody was the one who discussed this on Instagram and suggested I use it as a podcast topic. And I was like, that is perfect, perfect for this week. Because there's always any number of things I could discuss when I do these solo podcasts. But right now, as we begin hurricane season, some people call it, which is, you know, this time of year where we have to deal with so much family. Let's go. Let's talk about it. When I was little, and when I say little, I mean basically my entire upbringing, I hated holidays. I hated them. And that's so sad. I mean, okay, that's a bit too dramatic. When I was really little, when I was like a baby, when I was 3-4 years old, I loved Christmas. I mean, Christmas was super exciting and I got lots of presents. But as I got older and it became clear to me, when family comes together, they don't always like each other and they don't always get along. My dad was really a stressful person to be in any gathering with. He was really opinionated. He had anger issues and he was really unafraid of embarrassing anyone or making anyone uncomfortable. It was almost heroic the way he just did not give a shit about screaming, yelling, throwing his napkin in your face. That's just one specific memory I have. Saying things that were so offensive to the point where we were asked to leave people's homes. And, you know, sometimes I look back and say, am I being too dramatic? It didn't happen every year, but it just, it colored the experience of my upbringing that being around my father during holidays, which of course he was always there. My parents didn't get divorced till I was in my 20s. It was stressful. It was stressful being around him. And whenever you have a lot of people together with differing opinions and some alcohol, that can be really stressful. So I grew to really dislike being at holiday dinners, whether it be Thanksgiving or, you know, we're Jewish, but we would definitely celebrate Christmas and, any other holiday. I mean, quite frankly, it just became something really uncomfortable for me. And so I know that I would repress tons of emotions during those times. And the thing is about emotional repression is it's not something you think about. It's just that feeling of being really uncomfortable, knowing that you have to just, quote, get through the night. And as a kid, before I started drinking, and I was never a big drug user as a kid, but I definitely drank when I was older, there's nothing to shield you from the experience of being there. And I am certainly not here to say that drinking is a good idea to shield you. To be honest with you, the more we drink and we numb, the slower we grow and the more we repress because we're not actively able to be conscious and aware and work on ourselves. Having said that, when you're a young person, there's nothing to shield you and you don't even have the tools. You don't have the tools to really wholesomely feel into what you are experiencing. And so emotional repression in those situations really just feels like you're kind of holding your breath and you're going to get through it. And everything that happens from slight things, like maybe somebody digs on you, puts you down, criticizes you, says something in front of the family that makes you feel embarrassed or ashamed, and maybe everybody laughs because, you know, it's just a joke. But we all know that just a joke is not just a joke. And I am really adamant, and I'll say this as a side note. I am really adamant that we do not humiliate our children. I have heard such, I think, horrific things that people have said to their children in front of other people in the guise of it being a joke. Well, you know, Tommy over there, he's so skinny, nobody would ever pick him for sports. Look at him, eat a turkey leg, Tommy. You know, I don't know. That kind of stuff is so hurtful. It's so hurtful to humiliate each other. And, you know I'm such like a bleeding heart mom where, you know, I don't like practical joking. I don't like humiliating people. I don't like making people feel as if everybody is laughing at them and they have to laugh along. It's just, I will tell you straight up right now, it causes a tremendous amount of damage later on. I hear about it in my office. I have for years helped people to unravel what they felt was their responsibility to just lighten it up or just, you know, don't be so sensitive and what's wrong with you and why can't we just have a joke? I mean, it is definitely long lasting when that is the pattern with which we treat one another. And so I wasn't necessarily, that wasn't my thing. Like, I don't think I was largely humiliated. Of course, there were times when all eyes were on me for whatever reason. Everyone has those moments. But for me, my experience of emotional repression during family gatherings was more about not being able to stand the way mostly my father, and, you know, I hate to throw him under the bus, but it's just the way it was for me. I don't like making other people uncomfortable to the extent that I almost won't make people uncomfortable with what I think is a reasonable expression of my opinion, which I've spent years undoing and understanding that I also have to repress emotions when I don't speak my mind. But he was so unfiltered with his willingness to just tell people what he thought, but like in a really callous way, and also in a way that like was not socially acceptable. Because if what you think is a thing that speaks of hate, and if what you think is a thing that goes very obviously against the beliefs of the people whose home that you are in, who are hosting you, like, have some class, have some social understanding of the way to treat one another. All I'm saying is that that's how it was for me. And I learned that I would pre-grieve and pre-dread those kind of dinners, especially as I became a teenager and I just wanted to get the hell out of there. I wanted to eat and I wanted to leave. And if I didn't have to come, I wouldn't even want to come. And it's sad because you want to be able to enjoy those experiences. So that's one level of needing emotional repression, which is just no. And here's another thing, knowing that you don't want the spotlight to be turned on you. Because my dad was the kind of guy where if you were to cross him in those moments, the spotlight would turn on you and I would have to get it. And I was not one to ask for it. I did not want to get it from him. I got it from him often enough by doing nothing. And so it's just, I want to just bring connection to you. If you're a person who has to tolerate this kind of discomfort, or if you go to your family dinner and, you know, somebody else in the room is having a struggle with their relationship and they bring that toxicity to the group and there's nothing to do except, you know, kind of look down at your lap, and just the answer to this, the solution to this, because we can't change other people and we can't change how the family dinner is going to go. The answer to this is understanding three things. First of all, that this is important, that this is not nothing, that this is not just some hippy-dippy way of being an enlightened person. This is your health. This is your actual physical health that could be affected by the amount of emotions that you have to repress. So the first thing to ever know about this work is that it matters that we think about this, and it matters that we talk about this. The second thing is you have the power to affect the way you think and feel. This is not a passive process that owns you and you can't change. You have the power. If you are conscious of what I'm saying, if you know it's happening to you, if you allow yourself to be present with it, even when it's uncomfortable and it feels really spiny, it feels really like, oh, I'd just rather not think about it. Can't I just have a few glasses of wine and get through the dinner? Your emotions and your greater system, your nervous system and your brain don't give a shit about your wine. You will repress those emotions anyway. So that's the second thing. The third thing is that we have to take action. And our action here is so subtle. So don't worry about it. I'm not going to ask you to do some grand gesture where, you know, you're going to stand up and raise your glass and say, I am going to not repress my emotions and we are going to discuss this. No. You don't have to do anything like that. your action here is all very gentle and very calm and very within your control. So the first thing that we can do in this is what I call, like to call, emotional labeling. So what that is that we have to start figuring out how we feel about things. So I'm going to paint a very random picture of a family dinner. Random in that it's not one particular story that I think I have thought of or seen, just things that I can pick out over stories I've heard over the years. So here we are. We've got, you know, several family members, sisters, brothers, brothers and sisters-in-law, aunts, uncles, grandparents, parents, whatever. And like I said, and this could even be happening over Zoom because people can say things that can offend you. It's probably worse when you're in the room, but this really applies to any familial gathering where there could be tension or conflict. And somebody, you know, is discussing something that is either controversial or offensive or whatever. So let's say as it's happening, you feel angry or you feel offended or you feel triggered or you feel jealous. Some people get jealous when other people express themselves so freely because they're like, I wish I could. Or you feel ashamed because maybe you agree. I don't know. Any feeling that comes up, instead of just stuffing down an extra, you know, serving of stuffing and turkey and saying, oh, if I just can just eat my feelings, or instead of numbing it with the alcohol. And I'm not, by the way, suggesting you shouldn't eat or drink or do whatever you want. I just don't want you to use these things to not feel, you know. Instead of doing that, you start labeling it in your mind. So as, you know, Uncle Joe is talking about these things that are making you feel things, that are making you triggered, as the feelings come up, you say to yourself in your mind, that was anger. I just felt anger. Ooh, that was shame. What that person said, what my sister just said, that just made me feel shame. And now I want to say something back. That makes me feel desire. Now, desire, even though it's pretty much a positive emotion when we label it, can also feel scary because if we want something, if we want to say something, if we want to do something, if we want to get something and we can't, desire can be metabolized by our nervous system as fear. Maybe I'm not going to get what I want. So just label it. That was fear. That was desire. That was envy. You know, my sister was just talking about her son and his scholarship to school, where my son is just, you know, smoking weed and he doesn't even do his schoolwork. I just felt envy. Label it. Be with it. You are precious. Your feelings are important and they're precious. You need to acknowledge them and label them and be with them. Obviously, you're not going to run away from the Thanksgiving table to journal speak, even though I would absolutely suggest it, you know, I'm aware that this is the day after Thanksgiving, but in any family dinner or any gathering or any emotional conversation one has with their mother or their father or their siblings, yes, take it to your journal speak later on. But in the moment, if you are find yourself, whether it be a difficult conversation over the phone, in person, on Zoom, wherever, begin by labeling. I'm noticing that was anger. I felt envy just now. I find envy to be such an interesting one. It's so shameful to be envious of each other. It just feels like it lands shamefully. At least it does for me. God, Nicole, Jesus, stop it. Why are you jealous of that person? Look what you have in your life. You have so much bounty. You should have so much gratitude. Doesn't matter how much bounty and gratitude I should have. If I'm jealous of somebody, I have to acknowledge that, because if I don't acknowledge it, I'm going to repress it. Emotional repression in itself is a defense mechanism, and defense mechanisms are there to help us and protect us when used properly. So for example, you seek to be a person in this world who functions. So you can't be completely drowning in your emotions at all times, or else you couldn't even have a nice time at the dinner. You couldn't be a participant. If every single feeling you had was so big, you'd be a miserable person. So repression is good. It's okay. Everything that's happening here is okay. The problem is when emotional repression hits a point where it is more of our pattern to repress than to actually feel and to be in touch with ourselves and to be comfortable with being an emotional being, that's when we have to channel it into physical symptoms. And if you think about it, it makes so much sense. Because if I'm at a family dinner table or Zoom or conversation with somebody in my family that's hard for me to talk to. And I just get a super bad headache. That is a protective posture from my brain and my nervous system because I have to just get off the phone. Guys, you know what? I'm really sorry. I got to go lay down. It's safer. I call that safe in the unsafest way, but it's still safer than having to be in the presence of such big feelings that you don't know how to feel. So what we do here in my work is we learn how to feel. We learn how to feel safely and comfortably, and we teach our systems that we don't need to have pain and struggle and conflict and anxiety and all the things that own us. We don't have to have our lives marked by those things. We can simply feel. It's still not comfortable. Feeling your big feelings is still not comfortable, but knowing that if you allow yourself to feel through them, that this too shall pass, which I promise it will, that is power. That's empowerment. That's what we're all looking for. We think power comes from control, but that is really, really not true because we can't control anything except the way we carry ourselves. And the way we carry ourselves is only possible to control when we do work on ourselves and we look at what motivates us and how our triggers are owning us and they're the marionette strings that are pulling our hands and feet. And that's not what we want. We want empowerment, real empowerment, which is we know who we are, we know what we think and feel, and sometimes it feels fucking uncomfortable and we do it anyway. This is available to you. So we start with labeling. I noticed that just felt scary. Oh, I felt fear. I actually felt it in my stomach. Ooh, my neck just tightened up. That was fear. That was fear in my neck. I feel it's almost fascinating to start this conversation with yourself because you start to feel so warmly toward yourself. Instead of hating on your neck for clenching up, you're like, wow, look at that. That was response to fear. I just saw what just happened. My uncle is getting a little drunk. He started slurring his words, and I just got a pang of fear because I'm triggered from last year when he actually really humiliated me in front of my new girlfriend. I mean, I'm just making this shit up, but you know what I'm saying. And so we start to label and we start to connect with ourselves. And then the natural progression of that kind of labeling and connection is a softening of the fight or flight response because we're no longer having to repress all those feelings and we start to become comfortable, more intimate with our feelings. And then we take it to our journal speak later and we tell the whole story about why we're afraid or why we're envious. And usually it dates back to many, many years prior. Most of my envy that I feel, which also I feel envy as tremendous fear, a fear that I'm not going to be okay if I don't get what I need, most of that envy traces back to like fifth grade, when my parents sold my house and I had to change schools and I had to give the school tour to the girl who was going to live in my bedroom. I mean, it's not that specific one every time, but I'm saying things like that. They bring me envy. They bring me fear. They bring me panic and anxiety that I'm not going to get my needs met. It's old stuff. That's not happening to me anymore. I own my home. No one can take it from me. But those are not, feelings aren't triggered by logic. Feelings are triggered by the heart, by the things that have been left wounded that are still aching to be held. And so that's the way we start. We start by saying, I am important. This matters. First thing I said, it matters that I do this. Second thing, I can do this. I actually can. This is not something that I am powerless about. This isn't something that just happens to me. It happens by me. And if something happens by me, not to me, I have the power to affect it. And then the third, actually taking the time to do it, pausing within yourself. You know, those of you who are going to take advantage of this anxiety course, I talk a lot about pose, the anxiety pose. Pause, observe, stay and soothe, and embrace. We can take that pose with anything that's happening in our lives that makes us stressed out or uncomfortable or full of feelings, and we can be with those feelings. And we can press the stop, not just the pause, but the stop button on having to live in a fifth grader's reality. I'm not living that life anymore. It still really feels that way when I'm in my kind of lowest vibe, most scared, most frightened, animal backed in the corner kind of way. But if I can pause and say, okay, wait a second here. You know, it's almost like as if the animal was in the corner shaking and baring its teeth, and somehow the animal could have the consciousness and the pause to look around and be like, wait a second, I'm in the corner shaking and baring my teeth. Nobody else is even in the room. Oh, shit. I'm sitting here and baring my teeth at nobody, at a memory, at a ghost. You don't have to do that. And you know the thing about not having to do that? You do have to do that if you don't do what I'm, the process I'm explaining here, because you have to do it because it's as real to you as if it was still happening. I talk often about parenting my children through the years that were so difficult for me. Middle school was a very challenging time for me, a very sad and lonely time for me. And so parenting these five kids through middle school, and I've still got one in seventh grade, have brought up so much for me, so many things. And I've had great opportunity to press my pause time and time and time and time again and say, wait a second. First of all, this isn't happening to me. It's happening to this person who did not grow up with every single factor that I grew up with. So they have a different experience. Second of all, not only is this not happening to me, the part that happened to me happened 35 years ago. Okay, let's pause and be with that. You know, this stuff takes energy. It takes initiative. It takes mindfulness. It takes intentionality. It doesn't just happen. And so we can do this. You can do this for yourself. And of course, this applies to every situation in life, not just the hurricane season of November, you know, Thanksgiving through January 2nd. You know, it's all of us. It's with our coworkers. It's with our partners. It's with our children. It's with our friend group. It's with the PTA moms and the soccer dads. And we're always in positions where we're getting triggered into the past, because childhood is timeless. Dr. Sarno used to say that childhood is timeless. If we don't go back and look at the things that motivate us today, both bad and good, both hurtful and amazing, we are seriously like marionettes. And the odd thing is that the person pulling the strings of the marionette is also us, but it's our fear. I often say there are two energies in the universe, love and fear. And when fear is pulling the strings, life will feel very hard. It will feel like you're walking through quicksand. It will feel like you have concrete boots on. It will feel like, why is everything so hard all the time? Why am I so resistant to the things I need to do for myself? Well, because when fear is pulling the strings, it's really hard. It's hard to overcome it, which is why we pause and we say, how can I act in love? How can I act in love? And that might sound really vague when I say it like this. So I'm going to give you just a literal example of the difference between fear and love. If I am invited to a family gathering, and just, you know, I'm going to give this example just basically, so it's not about COVID or not COVID, because you can apply it to whatever situation you're in. But if I'm invited to a family gathering where several people are going to be there that could really trigger me, going out of fear would be, oh God, I have to go to this. If I don't go to this, my mom is going to give me such shit. And oh my God, my brother, that's all I need to hear about is she's the one who doesn't come. And, you know, and if I don't go, my grandma, she's going to be heartbroken. I have to go. I'm going to go. I'm going. I'll just get through it. I'll drink. It'll be fine. I'll go. Okay. That's going out of fear. You can go to the same exact dinner by saying this. I choose not to run away from my life. I know that a lot of things have happened. I know that it's hard for me to be in these situations, but you know what? I want a relationship with my family. They're not all bad. There's so much laughter that happens. I can't wait to see my cousin. It's okay. Yeah, things might happen. I might be a bit triggered. There might be moments where something really makes me feel some sort of way, but I can label my feelings. I can label them in the moment. I can take note of them. I can go back to my journal, speak later. I'm going to the dinner. Life is a choice between what hurts and what hurts worse, and it hurts worse to miss out on my family. So, warts and all, I'm going to the dinner. I'm going to deal with myself. I'm going to be present with myself. It's going to be okay. Do you guys see? That's the same freaking dinner, but a totally different person who shows up there, and it will have a totally different result. So I hope that is helpful to you guys. Okay. All right. Well, listen, as I record this, it's a couple days before actual Thanksgiving. I know this will come to you the day after. I hope that you had a good dinner. I hope I have a good dinner. We're just doing it for us. Only our family, only the family that lives in our home, because we're being COVID conscious. And so I will be cooking a grand dinner with many, many different courses for myself, my wife, and 4 out of my 5 children, because my oldest will be at a friend's giving elsewhere. Of those 4 children, one is a vegetarian, will not eat any turkey or anything made with chicken stock. My son, Oliver, will probably eat pasta. And Duncan and Stella and Tiff and I will eat the meal. But I don't care. I have a big smile on my face right now because I can't freaking wait to cook it. I love cooking the whole thing. And I'll eat till I'm totally sick. And then I will lay in bed and say, oh, I just have to get through the night and metabolize it. And that's what's going to happen. Listen, we all know who we are. And you know what? I can do it with love. I already am loving that bloated person laying in bed saying, I overdid it again. It's all right. You got to meet yourself where you're at. So that's my plan for Thanksgiving. I hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving, or I hope if you had a really shitty Thanksgiving, this podcast is going to help you reframe it in the way you need to be healthier as you move forward. Let's remember that Curable is offering 60% off for this whole weekend on a 1-year membership for Curable app. So that's getcurable.com/Nicole, NICOLE. And let's remember that my anxiety course, Freedom from an Anxious Life, is now live and on sale, $100 off. The coupon code is Black Friday, all one word. And so take advantage of that if you want to. I worked my ass off to make it great, and I really hope that it can change and affect your life. All right, my loves, here we are, holiday season 2020. Go. Good luck with it for me and for you. We'll have a good time. We're going to have a good time, right? We're going to make the best of it. All right. Well, this has been The Cure for Chronic Pain with me, Nicole Sachs. I will see you next week. Bye-bye.